Welcome back to Path to Glory, your Warhammer Underworlds podcast that focuses on competitive gaming, player development, and community growth. This episode was made possible by our patrons, thanks to everyone who supports us. If you're interested in supporting the podcast monetarily, please check us out at patreon.com/pathtoglory. If that's not possible, we still appreciate the listens and the ratings. This is Amon Kusro, and as always, I'm joined by my mad co-host, Jonathan Davis.
Grr. Hey, what's up?
What's up, dude? Are you alive?
That's my mad sound, yeah. I am alive and warmer than I've been recently.
Dude, it's crazy. I like walked outside this morning. I was like, is this even real? Like, was last week even real?
I know.
It's like 70 something degrees outside. I was so confused.
We went grocery shopping and I was like, wait, I don't need this jacket. That's funny.
Yeah, dude, it was wild.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've done a podcast too. We had a snowpocalypse here in Texas. So
yes, for those of you who are not aware, we had a historic winter storm. It snowed in every single county in Texas, even on the beach, because Texas does have beaches. And it was wild, man. Like, people lost power. I had a friend who lives in San Antonio. His fish froze in his fish tank, which also froze solid, block ice.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he had just got fish like delivered like 2 weeks before.
That's awful.
Yeah, we lost power, we lost water, and then there was like a boil notice because apparently there was like bacteria in the water, and it was wild.
Yeah. I know at least one person who had their apartment flood because they lost power. And then I have another one who they didn't.
Did they have a pipe burst?
I guess so. And then another one didn't lose power or heat or anything, but I guess wherever the sprinkler system was wasn't heated, so the emergency sprinklers in the apartment burst.
Wow.
So it wrecked everything there. So it's a real mess, but I've been lucky that I didn't lose power or anything. So
yeah. You were really lucky, man. I just realized how much we as humans rely on Wi-Fi and the internet.
Yeah.
Because like for a solid like 35 to 40 hours, no electricity, no water. So like woke up Monday morning, no electricity, got it back Tuesday night, thankfully, very lucky. And then Wednesday or Thursday, like mid-afternoon, we got water back. So we were using snow to flush our toilets. And then...
Wow.
And I told all my friends, I said, hey, like, fill your bathtubs while you have water because you're going to need it. And then, like, for some reason, like, I guess I didn't seal my tub all the way, so all the water drained. And then
no.
My buddy who lives in Dallas, his bathtub just froze.
Wow. Yeah, I saw the pictures and stuff of, like, people left the taps running and then that froze. So, well, yeah. What can you do?
It's crazy. I saw, like, one fan... I think I sent you a link.
Yeah.
It was like icicles coming out of a fan.
Yeah, a ceiling fan, yeah.
Crazy.
It's crazy.
Obviously, you know, while we do make slight light of the situation, we are still very cognizant and aware that, you know, it was a really tough time for some people. So, you know, our hearts go out to those individuals who had to, you know, suffer and power through it. And, yeah. You know, hopefully we can bounce back, which I guess we have because... It's like it never happened. It's wild.
it is really strange. Yeah, we had at least two people stay over. Their power was out. And then the other day, my fiance went over and helped clean up someone's apartment that was all messed up. So
yeah,
we're trying to help out where we can, but also just couldn't go anywhere for most of it. So
yeah, I will say congrats on the quick switch to fiance.
I am usually remembering.
Very nice. I'm sure she makes it a point.
Yeah, she doesn't like it when I call her girlfriend anymore. Yeah. I don't know why.
She got that ring, bro. She don't need no... She ain't your girlfriend no more.
Yeah, it's true.
Your fiance. All right. Well, in today's episode, we will be covering, obviously, game and community news, Patreon questions. We'll sprinkle some thoughts about our current Path to Glory Alliance League, which has been running... I think we're in the third round now, so it's been, I guess, 5 weeks, over a month. And then for our Patreon listeners, stick around for the end phase, where we talk about Season 1 warbands from Shadespire and how they fare in the current season of Direchasm. Interestingly enough, I think they're more viable than ever.
Yeah, could be.
But we'll get into those details. So, Jonathan, how about you start us off with some news?
Sure. So the first thing that we have is we do have a new patron since our last episode, thanks to Rowan Sweeney for supporting us. Also, a big shout out to his blog, No Gits, No Glory. I always enjoyed reading his articles and stuff.
Yeah. No Gits, No Glory is interesting. I love how everything has to do with goblins. It's great.
I also like his articles just about like playing the game and like being a good person.
You can't be a good person when you're a goblin, okay? Let's not get it.
Yeah, you'd think there would be more mischievousness.
Yeah. But yeah, he does a great job. I'm looking forward to more of his content. Speaking of content, the new episode was dropped by the What the Hex podcast. They seem to be back in action.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, you know, Phil always held it down, but Davey's back in action.
Yeah. And the team is back together.
That's right. Avengers Assemble. And they did an episode on the Ravagers. That was a good listen. Enjoyed that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they had just come out with their We're Back episode the last time we recorded. I don't think I'd had a chance to listen to it yet. So I was able to listen to both of those, and it's good to have him back. I mean, didn't realize how much I missed his voice, you know?
It's sexy.
It is.
No homo.
Then the next thing we have is the next Straight Out of Shadespire cam game event will be on March 6th, I believe. And this one is a special format. I think they have so many people signing up, they decided to go for it. And this one is going to be 29 players, and they all have to use a different warband. So it was first come, first serve. Somehow I was the last player to sign up, and I got Grimwatch.
Really?
Yeah. So basically just no mirror matches at all, and just see who wins. So,
well, I'm cool. Signed up as Magors.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah, but I didn't know Grimwatch were available. I probably would have picked those instead.
I know. I was hoping I would get something weird, you know, like Eyes of the Nine or whatever. And I think I just kind of lollygagged it my way to signing up too. But I was like, oh, okay, Grimwatch.
Yeah, I
sure.
I've been playing a lot of Ravagers lately, and I just keep thinking like, can Magors do this better? And I don't know. I actually did want to play the Ravagers first, but they were gone. So. Speaking of other events, this is an interesting play, so, or not play, but I guess event coming up. So I think it's officially called TG Play. Mm-hmm. And or maybe their group is hosting a World Team Championship / Grand Clash online this coming, I guess, spring. It's a big online event. It's going to have like Age of Sigmar, 40K, Warhammer Underworlds. And so obviously we're focusing on the Warhammer Underworlds event. So singles event, which is, I guess, a Grand Clash, and a team event, which is an alliance for each system. It's interesting because they've actually got like actual Grand Clash prize support from last year, which they weren't able to use due to something called COVID. And I guess they're just saying YOLO. We're going to use it for this online event.
Yeah.
Not sure if that's the smart move, considering they could lose their prize support moving forward. But, you know, more events, more fun, I guess.
Yeah, sure. It looks like it's basically a big league stretching over, 2 months? Yeah, 3 months. So it's pretty interesting. I think you play a game a week. In each event, and I think after a certain point it becomes single elimination, so maybe you play the first couple weeks and then maybe you don't have to play the entire the rest of it. I believe it is the same deck the whole time, so that's kind of,
yeah, that's the one part that's got me kind of like iffy on attending is like if this was one day, great. If it was one weekend, great. But the fact that like there'll be card releases as this league, and I air quotes, continues, it just doesn't make sense to keep playing old stuff. So
Yeah,
I made a request. Right? Like, I made a request on their Discord server, but they haven't got back to me yet. So,
I could see it both ways. I mean, on the one hand, I think they probably want to emulate the style of a real event, but I don't know. Yeah, I feel like I would get bored of that that deck pretty quick. I kind of don't. A lot of the time, I'm tired of a deck halfway through an event, let alone a month and a half later.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently, like, the reasoning was that some community groups find that changing decks so quickly to be, I guess, difficult to adapt to. And I can completely understand that reasoning because, you know, a lot of the time when you're preparing for these events, you're prepping your deck, playing a bunch of games, and if it changes often, I can understand that, you know, there can be more room for error. But I also think that's, like, the fun part of Underworlds.
Yeah, that is one thing about this season in particular, with the faster than normal release schedule. I could see preferring a, you know, slower, more stable meta to this, because this changes constantly, and then presumably we'll get restricted lists or something at some point too. So
yeah,
I can understand their ruling. You know, that they probably don't want to have to check decks every week. You know, so
I mean, I get that, but at the same time, it's like,
it would be a lot of work, but it'd be interesting to see how it goes and who ends up winning it. So keep an eye on that for sure.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how many signups they get too, because it's definitely a grueling format.
Yeah, I'm just not sure I can commit to 2 months of one game a week like that, in addition to all the other things I'm already doing. So
yeah, I guess it's more, there's more of a motivation behind it because I guess there is more visibility and there's obviously the opportunity to win some glass, but at the same time, it's like, I don't, as you mentioned, I just want to play the same deck for 3 months.
No, I think, you know, I hope the people that play in it have a lot of fun, but we'll see.
And if you're playing Alliance, it's like, okay, just take Crushes, Grimwatch, and Molog, and you should be fine. That's going to be every...
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I guess I don't know when their deadline is. I think it's probably not for another month or so. So I guess we'll see what, you know, see what the meta even is. I think maybe we'll have the Lizard Men by then.
That's right.
We'll have to see. Well, we know
what Tommy's playing if he plays in the event.
So. right. His team will just be 3 Lizard Men.
And they actually made a rule where you can't pick the same warband.
Oh.
So unlike the official Alliance rules where you can... They forbid it.
Interesting. I know that's how a lot of the other team events work. Like, that's sort of the whole point of the team events of the 40K stuff. But this, I'm not sure you want to do it anyway. So it's probably fine. The next thing we have here is there was an online skirmish this last weekend I wanted to mention. They had 30 players. They played 8 best of 1 rounds. The top player was Jan Willems with Hrothgorn's Mantrapper, and then Stefan was right behind him on Glory with Morgok's Crushes. They both went 7-1, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, congrats to Stefan. He's actually one of our patrons, so love to see our squad do well.
Yeah, I have to see what the Crusher deck was like. So
yeah.
And then I think Tommy did pretty well as well with Skaven, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And then Harrows, I think, were 3rd, and Tommy was 4th. So it's cool. Seems like it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Cursebreakers have been now released into the Warhammer Underworlds online game.
Yeah.
That's been really cool. I've been very excited. So you'll see me stream that, actually.
Oh. That'll be cool.
Yeah. I joined their streamer program, so I'll have some cool, I guess, UI stuff. And I still have to figure it out.
That's cool. Yeah, I saw that they've been doing some streaming stuff. I know they've also changed some things with the like way you buy into the game, and I know they've been doing some like stability updates and stuff. So that game is still around, if people were wondering.
Yeah. I just really want to just wreck face with Stormsire himself, but you're right. They did change the way that the model is. So the game is now, I think, I don't know if it's free, but I think
it's like $10 or something.
Yeah.
And I think go ahead. Sorry.
No, you got it.
I think it only comes with the 2 starter warbands, Magors and Steelhearts.
That's right.
Whereas I think it was like $40 before and it came with like four or five different warbands. So, which, you know, all the ones that came with are probably skippable anyway, and you probably want Curse Breakers and Thorns anyway. So might as well just get the lower buy-in. So I think it seems like a good move for new players. So
it's definitely an easier buy-in.
Yeah.
And I think Magors are going to be evergreen. So like they'll do fine in the current meta, at least. If they start adding Beastgrave warbands, then I think it's going to be really exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. So depending on the universals and stuff, they did a poll recently where they asked everybody what their like top three warbands to be added were. And I just voted for Godsworn, but
that's right. Honestly, every warband except Moloch and Hrothgar, I'm fine.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the general consensus.
Yeah. All right. What's next?
The next thing we have is if anyone is looking for more Underworlds game videos, which I know some people have requested from us, and we'll try to do some more soon too. Tabletop Sydney is a new YouTube channel from a game group in Australia, and they just released their first video. And I think they have a few more in the works. I watched theirs yesterday, and I thought it was a lot of fun. It's a good mix of like the players have like enjoyable chat back and forth, and the play seemed solid to me. And I like their different camera setups. They have like a few different cameras and the dice cams there, and so just pretty well done. So definitely recommend that if you're looking for games.
I enjoyed the video. It was good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Last update is we're, as I mentioned earlier, we're in the Alliance League that we're running. So actually I'm running because Jonathan is playing. Mm-hmm. And we're in the third round, which is, I guess, the fifth and sixth week because it's a 2 week per round event just because of scheduling and how a lot of the participants are all over the world. And so
yeah,
there's no point in giving like a rankings update right now because the rankings are updated live. So if you've, you know, finished all three of your games, you might be ranked higher than a team that's doing better than yours, but it's only played two. Yeah. So to avoid confusion, we'll avoid that today. But Jonathan, how's your progress been?
It's been all right. I haven't been carrying my team, but my team is the Psychopaths to Glory, and I'm with Val and Beardarm in the Discord. And so far Beardom's been carrying us. He's playing Grimwatch in all three rounds, and I think he's won every single game. But we've also been trying to give him the good matchups, I think, too. Val's been playing Crushas, and that's been pretty good. And I played Harrows the first time and then Wild Hunt in the second too. My Wild Hunt is going better than my Harrows was. But I think I'm We lost the first round, we won the second round, and then we just lost the third round. So we're probably middle of the bottom right now. But they've all been good games so far, and the team comps have been interesting. You know, matchups are interesting too. So I can't really complain.
Yeah, as long as you're having fun, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I am really enjoying the format. Building the decks is a lot of fun. Trying to, you know, figure out what three warbands to take is a lot of fun. And then when you see what the other team took, sometimes it can be surprising. Like, I was thinking about taking Hrothgorn, but we didn't think we could make a functional Hrothgorn deck and crush a deck at the same time. But then our opponents had that exact thing. So I was like, oh, what are they doing? And, you know, I don't want to spoil anything that, you know, maybe they're trying to do. But it worked because I lost a Hrothgorn in that matchup. So it's fun stuff like that that I think this format sort of allows for, you know.
Absolutely. It's why we do the league.
Yeah, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Best format ever.
I'm not sure what I'm gonna play next time. I think I'm gonna move away from the Wild Hunt though.
Boo.
they are fun. I was doing like a set the tempo kind of deck, which is good when it works, but I don't know. I just don't like third end phase cards, which it effectively kind of is right now.
Well, yeah, I think it's also like you have to keep Karthane alive, and Karthane's like really good aggressive because he does 3 damage when he's inspired. So because you run what I'm assuming, I don't remember your deck. Once I do the deck checks, I kind of blank them all out.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming you're running the blow the horn and then alive at the end of the round.
You know, I am, and I don't think I scored it once in the 5 games that I played with the deck so far. But yeah, I am.
There you go. One.
Just mainly a timing thing. Like, I keep having it in the third round or something like that. But
yeah.
It's been good. They're just dicey. I in one of the games, I it came down to me missing a five smash attack. So against like one dodge on block or something. So, or on guard. So, you know, that happens. But
that's the thing about, I guess, playing aggro is it'd be like that sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. I also think I probably could have focused on Hrothgorn a little bit more, but he's pretty difficult to kill. So I don't know. I think it's a tough matchup for Wild Hunt.
One other thing that I wanted to talk about was one of our members, participants in the league, kind of did some of my homework for me because I was planning on sharing some detailed information once the league was over.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But they were talking about warband selections, and this is Banana Boy, not to be confused with Bahanar.
Wow. All right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And he is on Team Outlanders. Mm-hmm. So shout out to him. He put some statistics together. So I figured I'd go ahead and share some of them and advertise his hard work, because if you're not in the league, you won't have access to this in the Discord. But looking at the stats, it seems like Rippas are doing really well in terms of inclusion. At the end of round two, they were in 56% of all team compositions up till that point.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then closely behind was Crushes and Mantrappers, who are a dead 50. So half the teams thus far.
Mm-hmm.
So 16 teams. So 32 compositions. So 16 of them included a variation of them. He wrote Sex Cow here, but I'm going to say Dread Pageants.
Yeah.
They were in 31% of decks. So more popular than the Purifiers.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And then Banshees, so the Lady Harrow at 25%, Purifiers at 25%, Grimwatch at 25% as well, and then Molog in 12.5%, Profiteers, Ravagers, Wild Hunt, and Gits rounding it out with each 6.25% apiece.
Yeah, that's interesting, and I think it kind of shows the difference in the format where the warbands with the most really good universals you know, kind of stand out.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Rippas has some amazing cards.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the format highlights the strong warbands for sure. He also actually posted win rates, which I thought was fairly interesting. So even though Rippas are the most included, they're winning only a third of the time. So they're a dead 33.3%. Mantrappers are pretty low right now with a 12.5%. This is, again, at the end of round two. So
yeah,
it might change. Yeah. Crushes are at 87%, 87.5%, so we'll round it out to 88%. It's pretty solid.
Yeah.
Banshees, so the Lady Harrows are at 75%, the Dread Pageant are at 60%, even though they're pretty highly included. Purifiers are doing really poorly with 25% win rate. And then the Grimwatch, I guess because of Beard Arm and some folk, they've got 100% win rate. And wow. Then I believe the Profiteers and the Wild Hunt up until that point did have 100% win rate. But I know that Profiteers were being played on Team Italy and they lost. And then I guess your Wild Hunt lost. So that may have changed, but pretty cool stuff.
Yeah. And I think at least one of those, was that for the team win rate or was that the personal win rate of that warband?
That's just the personal warband win rate.
Gotcha. Okay. Very cool. Yeah, I don't think I have Excel on my computer right now, so I can't bring it up.
Yeah, no, I tried bringing it up on my computer and I couldn't, so I have to use my phone because it uses numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. Cool. But yeah, thank you, Banana Boy from Team Outlanders, for rocking our socks with some great data. I guess I'll just use your work when I drop the article, but appreciate it.
Sure, yeah.
Let's jump to game news. Jonathan, I know you got some sauce for us.
Yeah, I feel like it's only been, I don't know, like 3 weeks or something, but seems like a lot of stuff has been announced for the game. The first one I have here is that I think right after we recorded our episode about the Ravagers, Dave Sanders wrote an article about it, about the Ravagers and their desecration mechanic. It's sort of the thought process that went into designing that. And he mentioned a couple of the like alternate versions that they tried and stuff. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I really liked how he was kind of lifted the veil, if you will, and kind of, you know, explained why they are the way they were. And I think the best nugget that I got is that he wanted to design a mechanic that allowed the Ravagers to hamper hold objective play without shutting it down entirely. And that was really hard. And so I think at the end of the day, the decision that they made is one that I think effectively works with the constraints and the goals that they had. But in terms of actual gameplay at this time, I'm not sure if it's making too much of a an impact. But I also think people are just not focusing on the desecration mechanics. I think if you want to score absolute desecration, like you probably could. Tony mentioned yesterday, I think, to us that he did. But I think it's just more efficient to play them aggressively at this time.
Yeah, I think so. I also just don't think that they're... I don't think they're exactly what's good in the meta right now anyway. So, yeah. But yeah, you know, it's interesting to see how their design went.
Yeah. We also got a couple previews. So I believe on the 21st of February, they previewed what the next warband would look like. And they shared the name, which was Hedraka's Mad Mob. And it's a warband comprised of Savage Oryks. And they showed a really cool model. He is the Savage Orc version of Wolverine. And his name is Toof Daga.
Yeah. Yeah.
Toof Daga.
Yeah, and they're the Savage Orcs, I guess.
That's right. And they shared a couple cards, but we're not going to go over them. You can check out the article on Warhammer Community. But the we'll wait to discuss those cards on our review. One of them's really long, though. It's called Stab, Stab, Stab. And it's very orky. It's blunt, to the point. It got some, you know, there was some memes because the text was so long, but the text is foolproof, man. You cannot misinterpret that card. So,
hey, that's worth it for me.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think they look really cool too. The paint job is interesting. It's like a lot of light colors, which is a little different, but the miniatures look great.
Yeah, I mean, I really like the... It's hard not to make Native American comparisons. I'm not really sure if that's the motif they're going for, but like the feathers and the fur and the leather, it's really easy to make that link. But what I find fascinating is that even though there are Oryks, they do look for, I guess, things that they would find in the wild to protect them or maybe give like some totemic meaning. So like, I love the bright feathers. I love the skulls. They're using weapons made of bone rather than metal. I think that's cool. So I like it.
Yeah, they also showed, they did, and I guess it was the next update where they showed the one with the club.
His name is Wallop the Skull.
Oh, okay. Very cool. I like the axe thing he has. I don't know if it's an axe or a club, but it's cool looking. And that scale, the scaliness of the thing is pretty neat.
Yeah, there's a lot of momentum.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I really like. I think it's an axe because they did, so this was part of the roadmap update that they did, and they showed the silhouette for the next warband. We're not going to make any guesses, but I think everyone can tell what it is and what they look like. So just take a look, and if you have no idea, just look at Games Workshop's website under Age of Sigmar, and you'll figure it out pretty quickly.
Those are probably some of my favorite of the newer Age of Sigmar models, I think.
Oh, so really?
I'm excited to see what that warband ends up looking like.
Yeah, for sure. And then Games Workshop did another major preview this past weekend. It was called Lords of the Mortal Realms, which I think primarily focused on Age of Sigmar, if not entirely. And they actually showed the whole entire warband for Hedraka's Mad Mob, which was super, super cool. And in their preview video, they actually shared the some of the fighter cards. They're like hidden with mist, but not really.
Yeah.
So like if you like contrast them, you can like figure out what the cards are. So there was a lot of that contrasting going around. online and on the Discord. So as the namesake itself, we've got a leader. His name is Hedraka's Mad Mob. No, sorry. He's Hedraka the Gob of Gork.
Which, is that like the... Is a gob a nose or a mouth?
I think it's like a priest. It's just, I don't know.
Okay. I know people will say like, shut your gob or something like that, right?
Oh, really?
I think that's a British thing. I don't know.
Well, you know, they are British.
Let us know what a gob is.
Yeah, please do. So it looks like he's level 2 wizard from what they've shown. He's got like a cool magical attack. There's some special rules there. We're not going to spoil it all. You can look it up. But the really cool thing is that they're...
I think we need to talk about his face.
Oh, we will. We're going to talk about the models in a bit. Don't worry.
Okay.
But the really cool thing is it says Primal Portent. When you gain the Primacy token, choose one friendly fighter. That fighter is now inspired. So that is super cool. We got a Primacy Warband. Pretty excited. And probably what that means is that Primacy will always exist as long as these guys exist. So that's pretty neat.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
If they have faction cards, of course, that support the mechanic.
Yeah. Or they're just not going to be able to inspire.
That's true, which I don't think they'll do that, but you never know.
Sure.
We've got Toof Daga. Oh, and they're all hunters, which is awesome. Toof Daga is the Wolverine. He's got a really cool rule. He can, like, at the start of the first round, choose up to 2 friendly hunters and push each chosen fighter 1 hex towards an enemy leader. That's insane.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then we got Wallop the Skull. He looks like he has a built-in Glory Seeker, which is pretty cool. And then we've got Dako Sharpsticka, who's the archer of the group. And he's got lots of arrows, because he can't say arrow.
And a very cool pose, I think.
Yeah, he's probably really cool. So, we're going to do a whole Warband review on them. So, don't worry. We're not going to spend too much time here. But, dude, the models are beautiful. I'm not really a big orc guy, but, dude, these guys speak to me on so many different levels.
Yeah, they have really good poses and stuff. I'm not sure what I think about the leader's mask. I just think I haven't seen anything like that before. I don't know if I really paid attention to the range. So, it definitely took me by surprise.
It's amazing. I love that he's like holding a snake.
Yeah.
He's got this wild, probably a beastman that they killed.
Can he see through that mask or?
Yeah, those are eye slots, bro.
Okay.
But orc, some orc lore for you.
Hmm.
If an orc believes hard enough, it's true.
I knew that. Yeah.
You know,
that's why red is faster, right?
That's right. And that's why like, the orc guns don't work for non-orcs because like they believe they have ammo.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It's crazy.
Yeah.
But no, I think he's awesome. Kind of looks like a Ninja Turtle with the mask, but it's great. I love it. It's my favorite model of the bunch.
Yeah. Yeah. I like how he's like stomping his foot and stuff.
Yeah. He's doing like some shaman dance about to get you with some magic. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. It'd be interesting to see how different they are from the other orc warband. I guess there's more than one, but
there are two.
Yeah.
This will be the third.
Yeah. See which one likes Primacy more.
Yeah, crutches are really good with Primacy, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which one is your favorite? Do you like the archer?
Yeah, probably the archer. I think he has like a very sort of classic pose there. Very strong.
He's doing what Alo does, but like he's like, if they're modeling, Alo's like a 7 and this guy's a straight 10 out of 10.
Yeah. This is like Mr. Olympia of...
yeah.
And Alo's like...
Archer poses.
Yeah.
Yo, he has no bowstring either. So like maybe he believes he has a bowstring.
Yeah.
That's
true.
I love it.
Very cool.
Yeah. Very cool warband and very excited. But that wasn't the only thing that they shared.
That's true.
Even though Hedraka's Mad Mob is the 6th warband to arrive in Dire Chasm, there is another way to get some of your friends interested in the game. There is a new 2-player starter set that's been announced for Warhammer Underworlds, and this, I guess, will be the official starter set for the game. That's exciting on so many different levels. First of all, there's recognition now, like as a flagship product, as from what I can assume, because like before this, there was just 40K starter set and Age of Sigmar starter set. Now we've got one for Underworlds, which is super cool. Someone made a point like that on Facebook, and it really resonated with me. And there's two brand new warbands called the Storm of Celestis, which is the easy-to-build Castigator set repurposed for this. So they're a Stormcast Eternal, but unlike all Stormcast Eternal warbands before them, they have four fighters.
Oh, no, they got a pup.
Yeah. Senor Griffhound.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very cool. I've always liked his pose. Like, I think since we saw the the Dreadfane
Condemners.
Since we saw the other ones, and we were like, oh, they're easy to build. I think people have thought that this might be a warband eventually, and I've always kind of hoped that it was, because I like that model there.
Yeah, he's very cool. And then the other warband opposing them is Drapur's Wraith Creepers.
Yeah.
So they're the easy to build Glaive Stalker set. It's very cool. We got three four fighter warbands announced over the weekend.
Yeah.
And eagle-eyed observers have noticed that the card art looks different on these models.
Very different, yeah.
Yeah, in this set. So the fighter cards look different, the gambits, the upgrades look different, the objectives look different, and I, for one, I'm hoping that this is a sign for things to come in the future of Underworlds.
Yeah, maybe. It could be a new art style or just the one off for the starter set. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
They are very different. The fighter cards have the stats kind of at the top and then the weapons underneath, and then the power and objective cards look completely different. So that's really interesting.
But yeah, it's cool. Really cool. I really like it.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like we have two of the old boards back, too. The
Yes. The Shishian Stardial?
Yeah.
I think is one of them.
Yeah, I honestly never memorized the names. I really probably should have, but...
Well, go look at the community article. Yeah. Yeah. But it looks like... I would assume that because they're coming in this set, and this is a great way for people to get introduced into the game, that this will probably be an evergreen set of boards for Championship and Alliance play.
Yeah, it could be. I assume that they have the same thing on the other side as the old ones, but I guess we don't know. I guess that may mean that current players don't have to buy it unless they want the warbands, but or I don't know if there are universals mentioned.
There are no universals mentioned. Okay. So this is strictly designed for starter play, and it's designed actually as like a game in itself.
So it's probably more like Dreadfane.
It is, but like it's more like the actual game because the boards are individual rather than one giant board that folds into four pieces.
Yeah, that seems to be the main difference. So very cool.
It looks like they got a seal of excellence from the Blue Tower, which is like a really big deal. So
yeah, I also see that it says that there's over 200,000 Warhammer Underworlds games sold. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I would assume games means like box sets. So
yeah, I wonder if that includes the is that including the expansions or or what?
Because technically the expansions aren't a game; they're an add-on to a game.
Yeah. If there are 200,000 starter sets that went out, I want to know where those people are.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
Come to Houston because we need more people.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, lots of cool Underworld stuff. And then also, this is non-Underworlds related, but I just have to talk about it. Warhammer Quest, the Cursed City, looks so sexy.
Yeah.
Very cool models, very cool, compelling gameplay. If you've played the Silver Tower, it's very similar, but the rules have been improved. It's got some really cool heroes, 8 heroes in total. They've got my favorite is a witch hunter with an underslung attachment to his gun, which is a stake shooter.
Yeah, the miniatures are really cool looking. I like the ogre.
Yeah.
Or the
ogre's cool. There's like a Wild Hunt looking archer. Yeah. He looks really cool.
Yeah.
So maybe more things to come in the future for Age of Sigmar. They've got two mages. They look really cool. I read the lore on the ogre a little bit on their website. Apparently he's just down to eat. Because he likes the taste of rotten meat.
I'm sure there's a lot of that in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
And then my favorite, so I don't know if the bad guy is like a ogre assassin, because he looks like an ogre, or not ogre assassin, an ogre vampire.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's an ogre vampire.
Wow.
Because he's huge. And I didn't know ogres could become vampires. But he's got like two undead ogre bodyguards. And then my favorite are the new vampire models they showed in the set. There's like three vampires and they have like panther legs. They're like bipedal, but they're like their legs end in panther paws or like some sort of wolf or whatever. And they're sick, man.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, so hopefully we can get a preview copy and show some content and maybe make some videos because I'd be down.
Yeah, that'd be cool. And there's a lot of stuff in there. That's really cool.
Yeah, there's a crap ton of models. there's 50 models, 10 objective markers, which are models, and then like 28 dice and a bunch of counters, boards, cards, tiles,
yeah,
rule books.
And they also they had that I think it's the White Knight or White King, and the skeleton models that they've been previewing recently are really, really cool. Just oh, the classic, dude, they're like cool. Death skeletons.
Yeah, they're the I don't know if they're called the Corsagi Night Guard or the Ulfin Watch. That's what they're called.
Yeah, yeah. It makes me think of the Underworld's Warband, which are some great models too.
Yeah, honestly, you could just replace them with these.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, well, I think that goes... well, actually, we'll just go ahead and cover everything else. There was some new Lumineth stuff, if you're interested in the Lumineth models. Some of them are really cool. There was one model where it's like a dude with a sword with his twin sister like resting on his like back, like jumping off his back. And it's like, that's going to be a nightmare, not only to build, but then to also make sure it doesn't snap at her ankle.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff.
Yeah.
So then there's a bunch of other Age of Sigmar stuff. There's a White King mini, as you mentioned, a new Nighthaunt model, a recreation of a famous Stormcast from the books and the lore.
Uh-huh.
So I think his name is like, it's not Vandis Hammerhand. Let me see. It's,
Gardas Steel Soul.
There you go. I think he's the first named hero that's not gold, like not wearing, not from the main Stormcast warband. So,
or
poster boys.
I like how the hammers on his cloak are like floating.
Yeah, dude, he just Superman posed. he just came to play.
Yeah.
So yeah, lots of cool stuff, and very excited for the future of Warhammer Underworlds and just Warhammer in general. I get surprised. I don't know why I wake up at 7:45 on a Saturday when I love to sleep, but we all know actually why, because you just love the hobby so much. It's so cool. And even if you don't play some of the other games, it's just nice to see what some of the models are and what they look like. So,
Yeah, I agree.
After seeing this Vampire Hunter, I'm waiting for a Vampire Hunter Warband.
That would be really cool.
Yeah. That's my dream.
The Witch Hunter aesthetic has always been one of my favorites.
Oh, is it a Witch Hunter? Yeah.
Or whatever they are.
Yeah, I just call him a vampire hunter because he's got an underslung stake launcher.
Yeah, like, yeah. Dude. I think in 40K they were witch hunters, so that's
what it is.
Thinking of.
Yeah, you're a 40K. Well, I'm sure most of us started in 40K. Yeah. Cool. Alrighty, so before we get into... actually, no, I think that's most of the episode already. Let's go to our patron questions.
Yeah.
Jonathan, why don't you kick us off?
Sure. So the first one is from Matt, and he asks, what do you guys think of the fact we've gotten seven four-fighter warbands so far in Dire Chasm with today's previews? Do you think it's skewing the game in a certain direction? Do you think that's good for balance? Is this a direction you enjoy? That's a good question. What do you think?
It's like three questions in one and an opinion piece. So I guess let's do them one by one.
Sure.
So let's both answer this first part of his question. I think it's a four-part question. Very nice, Matt. What do you guys think about the fact that we've got seven four-fighter warbands so far in Dire Chasm with today's previews? I guess I'm assuming he means the new starter set warbands as well.
Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah.
Yeah. That's, honestly, it is something that, you know, we've noticed very quickly, and I'm not sure if there's much we can do about it, because if you've looked at some of the Glory Points articles that Dave Sanders has written in the White Dwarfs, as well as some Warhammer community articles, he doesn't really have any say in the miniatures process. He just gets, you know, the miniatures are presented to him and then he makes the rules, which I think is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I think when we were talking about it, you kind of mentioned something about It probably is the easiest to put on a sprue.
yeah, because it's actually pretty amazing to me that they are able to fit every single warband on that same sized sprue, you know, that fits in that box. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, from an aesthetic standpoint, I don't think I really have much of an opinion, honestly. Four is fine. It's a good number to paint, probably. From a gameplay perspective, I'm not really sure. I think it probably will skew. You know, we only have two of them so far, or three of them so far, I mean. If they're all good, then it may skew the meta, I guess. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. So, like, I definitely have a preference. Like, I like three fighter warbands or five fighter warbands.
Yeah,
I think
me too.
I think that's a sweet spot for me personally. And if you look at the warbands I love to play, Farstriders, Stormsires, Cursebreakers, Profiteers, and Wild Hunt, they're 3 and 5.
Yeah, Skaven is 5. Yeah, I think I tend to like 5 or more because, like, when I think about the warbands I like to play. So,
yeah.
Yeah, 4 is an interesting number in this game because obviously you have 4 activations. So in the beginning of the game, it can be good. I like Mogor's Fiends a lot. They have 4 fighters.
If you actually look at all the warbands ever, mm-hmm. Iron Skulls Boys was the first 4-man warband, then Chosen Axes, then yeah. Magors. So we had 3 in Season 1. I guess Eyes of the Nine, I guess if you include the Blue Horror, then it doesn't matter. And then Guardians were the only one in Night Vault.
I guess it should be pretty normal, though, because most warbands are, you know, a certain number of fighters from one, like, race or, like, faction, and usually those are similar, so I don't think we should be surprised by it, you know, that it's 4 of whatever kind of dude. But it is interesting because if you have a lot of 4 fighter warbands, if you can build decks that can effectively remove fighters and you're doing a lot of like 4 versus 4 matchups, I wonder if maybe it's a little bit more swingy than some other matchups where, you know, whoever loses the first 2 fighters, for example, may, you know, run out of steam a lot faster or something like that. We'll have to see because, like, it really could depend on so many different things. You know, I'm not sure, you know.
Yeah. So, like, from my perspective, like, if all the 4 fighter warbands are good, then I think you're right. It's going to get super swingy because, like, whoever can eliminate the biggest threat first. Is going to be a challenge. I think if not all of them are good or competitive at upper echelons of the competitive meta, then you know, maybe it won't really matter. But it could tip the meta in the fact that there might be some warbands, that are really good at like killing fighters quickly. Mm-hmm. And if you can find a playstyle in which you can guarantee or have very high chance likelihood of killing 2, 3, or 4 wound fighters around, you might skew the meta because everyone's like, well, my guys are just dying so quickly. And if after I lose 2 of them, you know, it's really hard to win a game with just half your warband. So then maybe it might shift the meta in another direction where, you know, we start seeing bigger warbands. And then there's always going to be flux, especially with the universal cards, right? But I think that is something that I'm could potentially foresee is it actually, there might be too many 4 fighter warbands to where they might push themselves out of the meta because there might be a counter developed.
Yeah.
That's quite effective.
It does seem like, and this is very general, but it seems like in general, the larger warbands sort of counter the smaller warbands because if the larger warbands can start trading, then they have the advantage. Like, I think that's why, you know, like Magors have classically been pretty good into Stormcast stuff, you know. So we may also see that if the 4 warbands are pretty strong, some of the smaller warbands may have a harder time. So
yeah,
that's interesting.
I think so, but like the question about balance, like I don't know.
Yeah,
it's really hard to predict that, but
yeah,
in theory it should be balanced.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, right now I think things seem like I don't know if the meta would be that impacted. I mean, Malag is really strong. I think Hrothgorn's pretty strong. I think Rippas are really strong. I guess Harrows are really good. Those are 4. So I guess we'll see if that changes that much. I'm not sure. I guess we'll just have to see. A lot of it, I think, is also going to have to do with how powerful these all are, you know? And then we also have the lizards coming in. I think they have, is it six?
Six.
So if those are really good, they may just knock out a lot of the four fighter warbands. So it's hard to tell. It's interesting to think about, though.
I definitely think so. The last question, a part of his question is this a direction you enjoy? And mm-hmm. I don't necessarily know if I care too much, because the models have just been so cool.
Yeah.
The mechanics have been great thus far. Every warband we've seen feels unique. They have their own, you know, shtick. And then I think from a like collection perspective, I do think that warband count, or like fighter count, does influence like the aesthetic and style when gaming with them, you know, for a warband. You know, obviously mm-hmm. 7 fighter warbands and 6 fighter warbands and 5 fighter warbands all play different from 4 fighter, 3 fighter, and 9 fighter warbands, right? Right. I definitely can see where people can say, oh, you know, this kind of feels the same. But I also think that if you look at the warbands, they're all a little bit different, right? You know, you've got the purifiers, you've got, you know, like 4 fairly different fighters who kind of all specialize in one thing. Mm-hmm. But they're obviously ones that you care about more than the others. And then conversely, you see another 4 fighter warband that's a completely different wound pool. You know, you have 4 3 wound fighters, and then in the Dread Pageant, you have a 5 wound, a 4 wound, and 2 wounds. So I think that's interesting, right? Like, they should play the same, but they play completely differently. And you focus on different fighters and threats and stuff. And then you look at the Ravagers, and you've got 3 4 fighter warbands, but then you have a wizard. Right. Mm-hmm. So similar to Miari, but also very different, because the wizard can damage herself. She can become the leader. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
Then it looks like the vampires, the Crimson Court, they're going to be a hunger warband. The Mad Mob look like they're going to be primacy warband. So I think there's enough variety in the warbands themselves to where they're going to play very differently. For the starter warbands, I don't know. They might be simple. They're starter warbands, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm sure there'll be some cool and interesting mechanics there as well. If not basic, because they're maybe designed for, you know, newer players. So I'm not complaining. I think it's cool. And I think Dave Sanders and the Underworlds team have done a very good job of making them all feel different enough to where you're not necessarily thinking about each warband as a 4 fighter warband, because I don't think the Dread Pageant are a 4 fighter warband. I think, you know, they're 2 guys. There may be 3 fighter warband with Hadzu as a liability, right?
Maybe, yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's right, though, because I think that as long as they all play differently, they'll feel different to play as, and then perhaps the only simplification will be, like, what you need to plan for feels a little bit narrower, because you can sort of rely on small numbers of fighters showing up. But I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, and it really only takes one strong warband that has a high model count for that to sort of not be the case anymore, you know? So
yeah.
If Thorns or Gits or the Lizards are really good, then you're going to have to plan for that too. So, but for a very good question, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Next question is from Beardarm. With current board selection and offset rules, do you think board selection has become more or less influential as during the Beastgrave meta? What are situations or matchups where you might choose 3 objectives over board layout? Do you think longboarding could be more common? So another multi-part question. but it's good. And I really like this. So I guess, Jonathan, what are situations... So do you think the selection of boards has become less influential than compared to Beastgrave?
I do think that the roll-off in general is less important, which I think is great. Because it's completely out of your control. And I didn't like... There were periods of Beastgrave where it really felt like you could lose the game on the board roll in some matchups. Yeah. And part of that was because objectives were too strong. And then part of that was how diagonal boards could sort of mess you up. So I would say I think it's much less influential now. I say you probably almost always want to set the boards up. Because then if you need to diagonal board your opponent, you can. If you, you know, want to set it up wide, you can do that. Being able to set the boards up, I think, is just going to be stronger. just mainly because temporary victory thorn style play isn't quite as strong as it was before, probably a lot because of primacy and you know, some of the universals and stuff that we have. So I think that there might be a situation where you are playing an objective war band, maybe Gitz or something, and you probably do want the three objectives more than you want anything else, and you're happy to have them come to you or not, you know. But I'd say that's a little bit less common right now.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think like I was playing a game the other day, and like I didn't really care if I won boards or not, because there are a lot of good boards out there that can really help being placed as a you know, being placed first, because you're always going to have a set of starting hexes that fulfill your objective, whether you're trying to play aggressively or not. Mm-hmm. And I think for the aggressive warbands in general, like, you know, offset four is great. Like, you should still have access to, you know, charge lanes for at least one fighter, if not two. And a lot of the boards, again, like the Arena Mortis board, is great as a first board, but also reaction board as well.
And no Ember board.
Thank God.
Yeah, but like, and that was actually a big reason why you didn't want to lose the roll off too, is because they would Ember board you in like an awful way.
Yeah, that was miserable. And then the three objectives thing, like, I think that just comes down to, you know, who's the beatdown. It's a very old Magic article. You can just Google it and it'll pop up. But effectively, who has to be the aggressor in order to, you know, win the game or you know, stop their opponent from winning the game. And so, like, you know, if you're going into Gitz, you're probably the beatdown. Unless they're like Amberbone Gitz, then you're probably not the beatdown.
Yeah.
But then, like, you know, I played a game the other day, Ravagers versus Rippas, and I was like, obviously they're going to come to me because they have to kill me to win.
Yeah.
I'm also the beatdown, but they're more beatdown reliant, right?
Sure, yeah.
So I think that's always a good question to ask yourself. Last question here is, do you think longboarding could be more common? I'm actually glad it's really not common. I think it's kind of boring sometimes to like spend a third of the game moving up the board. I can understand how that's really good for control-based matchups.
Yeah.
Or like warbands that score in other ways rather than engagement. So I don't mind it, but I actually haven't played a single game of Dire Chasm longboarding, and I don't think I played very many that were longboarded in Beastgrave as well.
Yeah, I think that some warbands right now really will want to longboard. I think Hrothgorn likes to longboard. I think Mog probably likes to longboard. I think maybe like Wormspat. I think the smaller warbands that actually want to control the engagement a little bit. Maybe not Wormspat, but it's mainly just the big guys, I think. But in general, I don't think you need to do it. I think it's going to be rare, but I think it's worth considering because there are some boards right now that are pretty good at longboarding, whether it's offensively or defensively. The Arena Mortis one, I think, is particularly good. And one of them is a really good reaction board if you think they're going to longboard you. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe if you listen to this, you'll longboard more often.
I personally don't like longboard games. I just don't enjoy them as much. I don't tend to do it very often. I think I also tend to like warbands that just don't naturally want to do that either. So that may also be why I find it more annoying.
Yeah, different strokes for different folks.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you want to get the next question?
Yeah, the next one's from Magor. After some games, how have you found the Ravagers? You said you played them against Rippas, I think?
Yeah. I've been messing around with them because I really like the fact that Kagra starts off at 3 damage.
Yeah.
And I really wanted them to be better than or equal to Magor's and maybe have strengths in different ways. And while I do think they have better objectives, which can, you know, help them do well...
Mm-hmm.
I think overall, Magor just does better into the same matchups. Like, I think if they fought each other, it just really depends on who gets online first. Because Kagra can one-shot, yeah, you know, Magor or Riptooth. But then also, like, when Magor and Riptooth get cleave, it's like, oh, crap, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I played against them with my Wild Hunt in the team league. And it really just felt like I was fighting any other four-man warband kind of, or like Magors, or I guess it really just felt a lot like Magors. The desecration mechanic didn't really come into play either because I wasn't trying to hold objectives. And I think that actually the answer to a couple of these questions has to do with the fact that the meta right now isn't about holding a lot of objectives. You may want to control the objectives and hold more for a dominant position or something like that, but you don't really need to hold more than two most of the time. So I'm just not sure if this is the meta where they're really going to shine.
Yeah.
And then I think it also affects the boards we were just talking about.
Yeah. Maybe that changes when the Seraphon come out.
It might, yeah.
You know, maybe there's some support in there for objective-based strategies, and then some of the, you know, larger warbands come back, and then maybe desecration is more of an impact. But yeah, I think largely, not only do you ignore it, but your opponent ignores it as well.
So. Right, right. I mean, you can score stuff off of desecrating, which is kind of neat, but that's not something that really affects anything. You know, it's just another glory scored. So,
yeah.
Whoops.
Yeah. Next question is, which warband are you excited for more from the starter set announced this past weekend? And that is from Magor as well.
Probably the Griffhound looks interesting to me. I think people pointed out that the crossbow guys all do 2 damage. So that looks interesting too. It's going to be like Profiteers or something.
Yeah. Well, for that reason alone, obviously, Castigate.
Right, right.
The Storm of Celestis.
And honestly, the issue that I kind of have with the, what are they called? The ghosts.
The Drepper's Wraith Creepers?
Yeah. I feel like I'm not going to be able to tell which one's which. Kind of like the Harrows. And that always kind of gets on my nerves, but...
Well, one of them's got drums.
Yeah, I think I'll be able to tell which one he is.
Or... One of them has a crow on its base.
Okay.
One of them is holding his spear up.
Yeah.
And then the last one, if it's none of the other three, then it's the other one.
So it's either poking, sticking the... there's two that are poking. Okay.
Yeah, but one of them has a crow on the base.
Yeah. Well, that's just like the Harrows. It's up, down, left, and right. And that's like the only way to... even really tell which one's which. I don't know. I mean, I think it's fine. I think that you can, these models were designed before Underworlds was a game, and this is kind of a, you know, result of that, but just a little nitpick there, I guess. But it also will depend on how different those fighters are. With Harrows, like the Anguish one and the what's her face are kind of different, Screaming Maiden. Kind of different, so you do want to know which one's which. So
yeah, I'm actually zooming into this page so I can see, like, I didn't even realize you could see the numbers, but yeah, it does look like 2 damage.
Yeah, which is pretty gnarly. Which is really gnarly. Yeah,
I love it. Give it to me.
Yeah,
give it to me.
The Far Striders are like very sad in their corner.
Well, you know.
Yeah,
they had their time in the sun.
Yeah they did.
They're not even available anymore.
Nah.
So I think we're both Team Storm of Celestis, which is nice.
It is interesting,
obviously, though,
that like that's the name of the warband, the Storm of Celestis.
Celestis.
What do we call them? The Storm? Do we call them Celestis?
I think you just call them the Celestis? Storm, bro.
All right.
The Winter Storm of Celestis.
Okay.
Terrorizing Texas.
Oh.
Since 2021.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but like every single Stormcast versus Nighthaunt looking set, I'm sure the Nighthaunt are just better. if we have to go by Condemners and
hopefully
Lady Arrow,
hopefully they've redeemed themselves.
Hopefully the Griffhound is that X factor.
yeah, they're here to make up for the Condemners. Hopefully,
hopefully. Because even like Cursebreakers and Thorns, I mean, Thorns have outlasted them.
Yeah, that's true.
And the Reavers ended up being better than Steelhearts after a while too. So,
Yeah.
Well, hopefully, maybe if we get that Arena Mortis dude back in the game, Storm Lord.
Yep, Storm Daddy.
Storm Daddy. All right, last question.
The last question is, what do you think about, also from Agora, what do you think about people not letting others play the primacy rules if they forget to state it at the beginning of the game?
I have thoughts.
What are your thoughts? Tell me.
So, like, I would like to preface this by stating that this is a game that you play for fun. And even though winning is fun and being competitive is fun, I don't know if you should ever prioritize ruining someone else's fun for the sake of your enjoyment. And what I mean by that is, like, yes, technically there are rules. And technically, if an opponent states to mention that they are using primacy at the beginning of the game, then technically, you don't have to use the primacy token in the game. I just don't think you should ever forbid your opponent from playing something that they've designed in their warband. Like, if they have an extra restricted card, then yeah, obviously, you know, they can't play the game. But just, you know, if it's just like, I forgot to mention that, like, my entire deck revolves around primacy, like what happens when someone's playing Mad Mob, you know?
So I actually disagree with you.
Well, I think it's kind of, I know, and you can share your point, but I'm just saying, like, I don't think that's cool. Like, and, you know, I this came up in the Alliance event, and I definitely, the rule was asked, and I said, technically, you can do what you want, but, like, remember the point of this game. Like, have fun, and,
yeah,
like, I think if you forget, you know, then that's sad, but, like, I don't know. Like, if someone did that to me, like, I'd just be so annoyed. Obviously at myself for forgetting, but, like, dude, like, what, you know, I thought we were here to have fun. But I don't know. Maybe you have a different viewpoint. It sounds like you do.
So my viewpoint is that actually that's the wrong ruling. So I think that if one player forgets to announce primacy, for the judge to say that they don't get to use primacy anymore, I think that's actually wrong. And I think that for the other player to just assume that that's a fitting consequence is also wrong. For one, I don't think it's a very good sportsmanship because, the punishment doesn't fit the crime for me. I don't think there's really... I think you could argue that, like, maybe you would have deployed differently if you didn't think they had primacy. But I think that's a bit of an edge case. So I could understand if, let's say, I didn't tell you that I had primacy and I get a kill and then I say, oh, I gained primacy. And you say, you didn't tell me you had primacy. I could understand a ruling that would say that I don't get primacy for that kill, but then I get it from now on. To me, that would be a little bit more reasonable. But part of playing a game is sort of making sure that both players are responsible for the game state, you know, at any given time. And it just doesn't make sense to me to say that if you forget to announce it, then you don't get to use it at all for the rest of that game. Like that's to me, that's jumping to a conclusion that doesn't really make sense. And it's pretty clear that it's the goal there is to punish the other player in a way that I don't think is commensurate with, you know, any advantage they may have gotten by forgetting to announce it. The other thing is that the rules don't say you can or cannot announce primacy. You actually have to do it. You can't decide not to. And if you forget, then you've broken the rules of the game. And as soon as possible, any judge should try to get you to be following the rules of the game. So if half the game went by and you guys weren't using the rules for primacy, then a judge should make you use the rules for primacy as soon as possible to try to get back as close to the sanctity of the rules as possible. So that's more of how I see it. I think that the player that didn't make the mistake would have to, really have a really good case to show why they've been so harmed by the other player forgetting the rule that the only remedy to that harm is the other player completely go without, you know, a whole mechanic. And I think that would be very difficult to prove or to even, like, make a reasonable case for. Does that make sense?
Well, I don't think that's... It does make sense, but I don't think that's the case. Mm. Also, you said you disagreed with me, but you didn't, technically.
Well, you were...
You may have disagreed in the fundamental understanding.
You were saying that technically, if you don't announce it, then you don't get to use it. And that's what I'm...
Maybe that's where you disagree, right? It's like right. You have to announce it. It's a game
rule. Because if... Let's say you had primacy and...
Well, I'm reading the card right now, yeah. And it actually says you must show this card to your opponent.
Exactly.
So, like there's no like, if you don't, blah, blah, blah. So, I get what you're saying, 100%. I agree with you. And you said it very well, and you were eloquent. I think, personally, and it's hard to, like, not try to... Well, screw it. I think, like, if you're... Like, first of all, if you're someone who's doing this, I think... You're prioritizing winning more than anything else, which I don't mind, like, you prioritizing winning. Like, I love to win. I try to win every time. I think everybody who plays this game is competitive in some way because it's a competitive based game and there's only one outcome. One person wins and one person loses.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I think if you're just trying to get a cheap and easy win, like, that's not fun.
Yeah.
And that doesn't go in the spirit of the game. And I've had as a TO now, as the TO of my league, mm-hmm. our league, you know, I've had this come up, and, like, you know, it's just really frustrating because it's like, why are you even trying to make this a debate?
Like, yeah.
Do you like winning a game for a league with no prize matters so much to you that you're not going to let someone who built something into their deck allowed to be played?
Well,
that's like saying, like, you didn't tell me you had a wizard, so you can't use any spells.
Well, I actually don't mind a player asking the question. And I guess my point is that if TOs are going to rule that if one player forgets, they lose primacy, then it's actually in the player's interest to let their opponent forget and then call them on it.
Agree.
And so that's why I guess my larger point is that I think as a community, and particularly the people that are making judge calls at events, I think that they need to think about it a little bit differently, and prioritize this, basically, like, the sanctity of the rules of the game. Like, if I have sudden growth on a fighter and then I move, you know, and then later on we remember that, you know, I couldn't move that far, it would be a little unreasonable if I just lose sudden growth. It would probably not be unreasonable to say, you know, we both forgot this, and from now on I have to follow the rules of the card. You know what I mean? Like, so to me, there are fitting punishments and there are fitting rules, like agreements and things like that. And I don't think that losing primacy for the whole match or the whole game, I just don't think it fits. So that's one thing. And then I also don't think that TOs should encourage anything that even seems like kind of like a gotcha play, which to me this kind of seems like. I just don't think it's good for the community, and I just don't think it's the right call either from, like, a judging perspective. So
yeah, I agree. So how would you phrase that, like, you know, how would you want TOs to communicate that? Because, like, yes, we can wait for an FAQ and we can wait for an errata.
Yeah, well,
but, like, how would you just say, like, no matter what, if someone has primacy, you play it, you can't forget? Like,
well, I mean, technically this is covered in the rules, because if you roll any dice at all before you tell your opponent that you have primacy, because you have to do it when you announce your warband, you've broken the rules. And according to the rules of tournament packs, if it's discovered that you are breaking the rules, then you can call a judge and you can get a warning. What isn't covered is what to do from then on. But to me, the basic assumption should always be you should follow the rules of the game as they're written from that point on as much as possible. So, and I assume most people aren't forgetting to declare primacy on purpose. Like, they're not, I don't think there's a lot of advantage to be gained from that. And if you were at an event and it happened, and one player did it multiple times, presumably the judges would catch on and, you know, it would be called out. But So to me, that's how it should be handled according to the rules of any event. But I don't think it should be encouraged for... I don't think players should be encouraged to catch other players on rules mistakes that, you know, by all accounts are probably just mistakes. And then for the players that make those catches to gain large advantages. I just think it's bad for the culture of the game.
I completely agree. And I don't really see this happening very much in our community. There are a couple of edge cases, of course. But I think there are two conversations here, right? So the first conversation is you stating that this shouldn't even be an issue.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. So that is a very good point, and I agree with that. I think we also both agree that if for whatever reason someone forgets to play or announce that they have the primacy token, it should still be played in the game. I think you made up a really good point that it's technically violating the game rules. And just like you can't charge when you have a charge token, you can't. It says you must. There's no gray area here.
Mm-hmm.
For me, which is, I guess, an additional layer behind your answer, is it's just dumb if you don't let someone play with a mechanic that's designed for the game, for the season, with their deck. And I think there's some sportsmanship issues there because you're prioritizing your experience over theirs.
And I agree with that, but I guess for me it's much more about like if the rules allow people to do things a certain way, then I think they're going to do them. So to me, it kind of always falls on the responsibility of the event organizer or the community as a whole to sort of decide what things are allowed and what things are not allowed, you know, because if you ask a judge a question like that and they say, well, I guess you just skip primacy for the rest of this match, but you can get it at the beginning of the next one or something, like, you know, that's the rule. That's what the judge said. So to me, I have much more emphasis on bad rulings than I do, like, you know, some kind of a weird legal situation that came up and the players weren't sure how to handle it. You know what I mean? But
I completely agree.
It is interesting. I mean, really, I think that if you, I think the best thing to do is to say, like, it probably should have been like, you have to ask the other player. And I think in practice, the best thing really to do is to just ask the other player, hey, do you have primacy? Because I don't. Or I do.
I also think if someone's like setting up their warband and they place a primacy counter on their side of the board.
yeah.
And then they forget to say, I have primacy. I think you can bring a pretty well-educated desk and you can say, hey, I saw you have a primacy counter. Are you playing primacy or is it just something that you keep in your box? You know?
Right. I mean, really, with any board game like this, it's both players' responsibility as much as possible to make sure that both of them are following the rules. So I kind of blame, in general, I kind of blame both players. And this is a little bit of a situation where, like, you can't, one player might not know. So I can understand that, you know, you could be caught by surprise. I just don't think it actually really matters. And then especially because there could be situations when your whole deck revolves around primacy, that I just don't think the decision to say, oh, well, now you just don't get primacy, I think that's, like, objectively wrong. I think it's a wrong decision. So anyway, that's a bit of a
a tangent there. For sure. But it's a good one, and I think it's very important for players to adopt this kind of mentality. You might not agree with Jonathan or myself or the both of us, but I think if you are playing a game for the reasons in which we would believe you would play a game, which is to have fun, create a mutually shared experience that players can learn from and walk away from, I think that's important. Because, like, yeah, losing sucks, and that can upset you or tilt you or whatever, but, like, I don't think losing a game will stop you from playing a game.
Yeah.
I think what's going to stop people from playing a game is for community members to treat them in a way in which is not proper conduct. And proper conduct can be subjective, but for the rules of this game, you know, with sportsmanship, because that can kill someone off from a community.
Yeah.
And that's not acceptable.
I think it leaves a real bad taste in most people's mouths when that kind of thing happens. And I mean, we've all lost, you know, games at big events, and, like, I would rather do that than win a game because of something like that. But again, like, I don't think it's really on the player as much as it's on, like, you know, the ultimate decision maker. So,
yeah. Like, because
if you said, hey, you forgot to do primacy, now you don't get it, I would say, no, I don't think that's how it works. And I would ask for a judge, you know?
Yeah.
And I would, well, like, know, I would take the warning, but I wouldn't think it would be okay to, you know, just basically throw that game away potentially.
Yeah. I mean, dude, I played in Grand Clash Finals where someone's like, I'm going to make an attack action with my guy.
Mm-hmm.
Cause they play an upgrade and I'm like, oh, you didn't play ready for action. And they're like, oh, yeah, you mind if I just play that real quick? And I'm like, duh, yeah, go for it, dude.
Sure,
like,
yeah,
that was your intention. You know, so it happens. Yeah. It happens. Or someone's like, oh, I accidentally, you know, technically I did score this. I forgot to place it down. And I'm like, yeah, go ahead. You know, yeah.
Well, I mean, one of the things I've said before to different people is that I can understand you wanting to follow the game, the rules of the game exactly. But I think you have to understand that that actually isn't how most people play. And if you are going to actually expect people to do that, you need to upfront at the very beginning, make it very clear exactly what you expect them to do. If, you know, and you also need to, it to be very clear that you are going to play exactly according to the rules, which means you can never go back if you say pass. You can never forget a reaction window. Like, so, and I think because so few people actually play like that, when you do get people that are nitpicking on those sort of things, it comes across really gamey because it just seems like they're doing it to get an advantage because they're probably not playing the perfect game themselves and then just holding you up to this kind of a crazy standard. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
At the same time, I don't think you should let like super sloppy play like go, you know, completely unpunished if it's you feel like you're being taken advantage of. But in my experience, it usually tends to be kind of the other way.
Yeah, my experience is that if someone is playing super sloppy, it's either they're brand new and you kind of help coach them through it,
mm-hmm.
or it's this is an intentional conduct that needs to be reported. And you generally try to give people the benefit of the doubt. There's only one time in my life where I've ever had to call a judge because I thought that there was some intentional
mm-hmm.
activity taking place. And like when the judge showed up and watched the game, it was fine after that, right? So,
right.
Yeah. I think moral of the story, if you want to play with primacy, you can play with primacy and no one can tell you no. Unless they're a TO and then they're wrong.
Yeah, I would just encourage TOs to, you know, try to make the decisions that are good for the game and both players, you know. And not, I don't think there should be very many punishments, so... Anyway.
Agreed. Well, I think that was our last question, and some solid questions. Only, I guess there were not as many as I thought we were going to get, but I think they were all very thorough.
Yeah, yeah,
and led to some great conversations. So thank you to Matt, Beardarm, and Magor, some of our patrons, for asking some awesome questions. I also don't think we gave people enough time in advance.
I'll try to be better about so that next time.
Yeah, we'll definitely work on that. But I think that does it.
Oh, actually, we did have one more that I forgot. Someone asked if we were going to start up the Warband Wisdom series again. I think the next one on the list is Profiteers.
That's right.
And we will be starting that back up. I know we started it at the beginning of the COVID stuff because we had a lot of extra time. And then I guess things normalized. And it seems like we don't have as much time anymore. But...
yes,
but definitely something we want to continue. We will start scheduling guests and stuff for those shortly. So
that's right. Though we won't have a guest for the Profiteers one because you'll be interviewing me.
Yeah, you called that one.
Yeah. Well, I also feel like I've played them the best.
Yeah. I think if we were going to get a guest, I don't know if there'd be a better one. So
I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, but, you know, Profiteers are very familiar to both of us.
Yeah, yeah.
We've both had success with that warband.
I'm sure there'll be a warband that I decide I want to claim for myself, too. So,
yeah.
But.
Well, I was thinking about Guardians, and it's like, it's only you and Tommy Conboy who've won any sort of trophy with them that's not a local trophy. So
yeah, yeah, that's true. That's true.
It's something to consider. So long but, ago. yeah, ATC 2019, baby. But 2022, because I don't think 2021 is happening.
Yeah.
But 2022, you better watch out.
Yep. I probably won't play Guardians.
No. You'll probably play the new L4 band of the season.
Maybe.
Or Skaven. You never know.
Yeah, who knows?
Or Vampires. Vampire Hunters.
There's so many different warbands now. I'm not even sure what's left. If they do a Free Peoples sometime, I'm going to be all over that. But...
I think a lot of people would really like Free Peoples. I just don't think it's ever going to happen, personally.
Yeah.
I just don't. But yeah, we've got four seasons. So that'll be 8, 16, 24, 32 warbands, and then four additional warbands. So we're going to be at 36 at the end of this season.
It's crazy.
And then By the time, I guess, ATC comes around, there'll be eight more. So 42 warbands.
Wow. I started when there were 10. So
I started when there were two, bro. That is wild. It's awesome for the game, but it's a lot of monies and commission painting too.
That's no one's fault but your own.
All right, man. You want to wrap this up?
Yeah, I think so. That's going to be it for this episode. If you're a Patreon supporter, be sure to check out the exclusive end phase episode on Patreon, where we'll talk about the season one warbands from Shadespire and how they fare in the current season of Direchasm. Once again, thank you to our Patreon supporters. If you'd like to join our current patrons, you can do so at patreon.com/pathtoglory. You can find all of our blog content on pathtoglorypodcast.com. If you have any feedback, questions, or comments, let us know on Facebook, Twitter, or Discord at Path to Glory Podcast. Please rate and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And as always, thanks for listening, and we wish you the best of luck on your path to glory.
Primacy is allowed! Let it happen!
It's required, even. Yeah.
It's required. It's a core game rule.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is. It is. I mean, that you convinced me. Okay. I mean, and I read the card again. It made sense.
That kind of thing just annoys me.
Honestly, I'm including that in the podcast.